Do you know, what delights me most, is that you treat me quite like an equal. But we are not equals, no, we are not, you are better. But we shall get on. Do you know, all this last month, I've been saying to myself, either we shall be friends at once, forever, or we shall part enemies to the grave. And saying that, of course, you loved me, Alicia laughed gaily. I did. I loved you awfully. I've been loving and dreaming of you. And how do you know it all beforehand? Ah, here's the doctor. Goodness. What will he tell us? Look at his face. Chapter 7. Ilusha, the doctor, came out of the room again, muffled in his fur coat and with his cap on his head. His face looked almost angry and disgusted, as though he were afraid of getting dirty. He cast a cursory glance round the passage, looking sternly at Alicia and Coley as he did so. Alicia waved from the door to the coachman, and the carriage that had brought the doctor drove up. The captain darted out after the doctor, and, bowing apologetically, stopped him to get the last word. The poor fellow looked utterly crushed. There was a scared look in his eyes. "Your Excellency, Your Excellency. Is it possible?" he began, but could not go on and clasped his hands in despair. Yet he still gazed imploringly at the doctor, as though a word from him might still change the poor boy's fate. "I can't help it, I am not God," the doctor answered offhand, though with the customary impressiveness. "Doctor. Your Excellency. And will it be soon, soon?" "You must be prepared for anything," said the doctor in emphatic and incisive tones, and dropping his eyes, he was about to step out to the coach. "Your Excellency, for Christ's sake." The terror-stricken captain stopped him again. "Your Excellency. But can nothing, absolutely nothing, save him now?" "It's not in my hands now," said the doctor impatiently, "but HM." He stopped suddenly. "If you could, for instance, send your patient at once, without delay," the words "at once, without delay," the doctor uttered with an almost wrathful sternness that made the captain start, "to Syracuse," the change to the new official "to Syracuse," cried the captain, unable to grasp what was said. "Syracuse is in Sicily," Collier jerked out suddenly in explanation. The doctor looked at him. "Sicily. Your Excellency," faltered the captain, "but you've seen," he spread out his hands, indicating his surroundings, "mama and my family?" No, Sicily is not the place for the family should go to Caucasus in the early spring. Your daughter must go to the Caucasus, and your wife, after a course of the waters in the Caucasus for her rheumatism, must be sent straight to Paris to the mental specialist Lepeltier. I could give you a note to him, and then there might be a change. Doctor, doctor. But you see," the captain flung wide his hands again despairingly, indicating the bare wooden walls of the passage. "Well, that's not my business," grinned the doctor. "I have only told you the answer of medical science to your question as to possible. Don't be afraid, apothecary, my dog won't bite you," Collier rapped out loudly, noticing the doctor's rather uneasy glance at Perezvon, who was standing in the doorway. There was a wrathful note in Collier's voice. He used the word apothecary instead of doctor on purpose, and, as he explained afterwards, used it to insult him. "What's that?" The doctor flung up his head, staring with surprise at Collier. "Who's this?" he addressed Alicia, as though asking him to explain. "It's Perezvon's master, don't worry about me," Collier said incisively again. "He hears the bell, but where it is he cannot tell. Goodbye, we shall meet in Syracuse." "Who's this? Who's this?" The doctor flew into a terrible rage. "He is a schoolboy, doctor. He is a mischievous boy, take no notice of him," said Alicia, frowning and speaking quickly. "Collier, hold your tongue," he cried to Krasotkin. "Take no notice of him, doctor," he repeated, rather impatiently. "He wants a thrashing, a good thrashing." The doctor stamped in a perfect fury. "And you know, apothecary, My Perez one might bite, said Kolya, turning pale, with quivering voice and flashing eyes. I, Perez one. Kolya, if you say another word, I'll have nothing more to do with you, Alishaw cried peremptorily. There is only one man in the world who can command Nikolay Krasotkin. This is the man, Kolya pointed to Alishaw. I obey him, good, bye. He stepped forward, opened the door, and quickly went into the inner room. Perezvon flew after him. The doctor stood still for 5 seconds in amazement, looking at Alishaw, then, with a curse, he went out quickly to the carriage, repeating aloud, This is. I don't know what it is. The captain darted forward to help him into the carriage. Alishaw followed Kolya into the room. He was already by Ilushaw's bedside. The sick boy was holding his hand and calling for his father. A minute later the captain, too, came back. Father, come. Ilushaw faltered in violent excitement, but apparently unable to go on, he flung his wasted arms, found his father and Kolya, uniting them in one embrace, and hugging them as tightly as he could. The captain suddenly began to shake with dumb sobs, and Kolya's lips and chin twitched. Father. How sorry I am for you. Ilushaw moaned bitterly. Ilushaw? Darling. The doctor said. You would be all right. We shall be happy. The doctor. The captain began. Ah, father. I know what the new doctor said to you about me. I saw. Cried Ilushaw, and again he hugged them both with all his strength, hiding his face on his father's shoulder. Father, don't cry, and when I die get a good boy, another one. Choose one of them all, a good one, call hush, old man. You'll get well, Krasotkin cried suddenly, in a voice that sounded angry. But don't ever forget me, father. Ilushaw went on, come to my grave. And father, bury me by our big stone, where we used to go for our walk, and come to me there with Krasotkin in the evening. And Perezvon, I shall expect you. Father. His voice broke. They were all three silent, still embracing. Nina was crying, quietly in her chair, and at last seeing them all crying, Mama, too, burst into tears. Ilushaw? She exclaimed. Krasotkin suddenly released himself from Ilushaw's embrace. Good, bye, old man. Mother expects me back to dinner, he said quickly. What a pity I did not tell her. She will be dreadfully anxious. But after dinner I'll come back to you for the whole day, for the whole evening, and I'll tell you all sorts of things. And I'll bring Perezvon. But now I will take him with me, because he will begin to howl when I am away and bother you. Good, bye. And he ran out into the passage. He didn't want to cry, but in the passage he burst into tears. Alishaw found him crying. Kolya, you must be sure to keep your word and come, or he will be terribly disappointed, Alishaw said emphatically. I will. Oh. How I curse myself for not having come before, muttered Kolya, crying, and no longer ashamed of it. At that moment the captain flew out of the room, and at once closed the door behind him. His face looked frenzied. His lips were trembling. He stood before the two and flung up his arms. I don't want a good boy. I don't want another boy. He muttered in a wild whisper, clenching his teeth. If I forget thee, knees before the wooden bench. Pressing his fists against his head, he began sobbing with absurd whimpering cries, doing his utmost that his cries should not be heard in the room. Kolya ran out into the street. Good, bye, Karamazov. Will you come yourself? He cried sharply and angrily to Alishaw. What was that he said about Jerusalem? What did he mean by that? It's from the Bible. If I forget thee, Jerusalem, that is, if I forget all that is most precious to me, if I let anything take its place, then may. I understand, that's enough. Mind you come. Perezvon. He cried with positive ferocity to the dog, and with rapid strides he went home. Book 11 Ivan, Chapter 1 At Grushnka's Alishor went towards the cathedral square to the widow Morozov's house to see Grushnka, who had sent Fenya to him early in the morning with an urgent message begging him to come. Questioning Fenya, Alishor learned that her mistress had been particularly distressed since the previous day. During the 2 months that had passed since Mitya's arrest, Alishor had called frequently at the widow Morozov's house, both from his own inclination and to take messages for Mitya. 3 days after Mitya's arrest, Grushnka was taken very ill and was ill for nearly 5 weeks. For one whole week she was unconscious. She was very much changed, thinner and a little sallow, though she had for the past fortnight been well enough to go out. But to Alishor her face was even more attractive than before, and he liked to meet her eyes when he went into her. A look of firmness and intelligent purpose had developed in her face. There were signs of a spiritual transformation in her, and a steadfast, fine and humble determination that nothing could shake could be discerned in her. There was a small vertical line between her brows which gave her charming face a look of concentrated thought, almost austere at the first glance. There was scarcely a trace of her former frivolity. It seemed strange to Alishor, too, that in spite of the calamity that had overtaken the poor girl, betrothed to a man who had been arrested for a terrible crime, almost at the instant of their betrothal, in spite of her illness and the almost inevitable sentence hanging over Mitya, Grushnka had not yet lost her youthful cheerfulness. There was a soft light in the once proud eyes, though at times they gleamed with the old vindictive fire when she was visited by one disturbing thought stronger than ever in her heart. The object of that uneasiness was the same as ever, Katerina Ivanovna, of whom Grushnka had even raved when she lay in delirium. Alishor knew that she was fearfully jealous of her. Yet Katerina Ivanovna had not once visited Mitya in his prison, though she might have done it whenever she liked. All this made a difficult problem for Alishor, for he was the only person to whom Grushnka opened her heart and from whom she was continually asking advice. Sometimes he was unable to say anything. Full of anxiety he entered her lodging. She was at home. She had returned from seeing Mitya half an hour before, and from the rapid movement with which she leapt up from her chair to meet him he saw that she had been expecting him with great impatience. A pack of cards dealt for a game of fools lay on the table. A bed had been made up on the leather sofa on the other side and Maximov lay, half reclining, on it. He wore a dressing gown and a cotton nightcap, and was evidently ill and weak, though he was smiling blissfully. When the homeless old man returned with Grushnka from Mokro 2 months before, he had simply stayed on and was still staying with her. He arrived with her in rain and sleet, sat down on the sofa, drenched and scared, and gazed mutely at her with a timid, appealing smile. Grushnka, who was in terrible grief and in the first stage of fever, almost forgot his existence in all she had to do the first half hour after her arrival. Suddenly she chanced to look at him intently, he laughed a pitiful, helpless little laugh. She called Fenya and told her to give him something to eat. All that day he sat in the same place, almost without stirring. When it got dark and the shutters were closed, Fenya asked her mistress, "Is the gentleman going to stay the night, mistress?" "Yes, make him a bed on the sofa," answered Grushnka. Questioning him more in detail, Grushnka learned from him that he had literally nowhere to go, and that Mr. Kalganov, my benefactor, told me straight that he wouldn't receive me again and gave me 5 rubles. "Well, God bless you, you'd better stay, then," Grushnka decided in her grief, smiling compassionately at him. Her smile wrung the old man's heart and his lips twitched with grateful tears. And so the destitute wanderer had stayed with her ever since. He did not leave the house even when she was ill. Fenya and her grandmother, the cook, did not turn him out, but went on serving him meals and making up his bed on the sofa. Grushnka had grown used to him, and coming back from seeing Mitya, whom she had begun to visit in prison before she was really well, she would sit down and begin talking to Maximushka about trifling matters, to keep her from thinking of her sorrow. The old man turned out to be a good story teller on occasions, so that at last he became necessary to her. Grushenka saw scarcely anyone else beside Alishaw, who did not come every day and never stayed long. Her old merchant lay seriously ill at this time, at his last gasp, as they said in the town, and he did, in fact, die a week after Mitya's trial. 3 weeks before his death, feeling the end approaching, he made his sons, their wives and children, come upstairs to him at last and bade them not leave him again. From that moment he gave strict orders to his servants not to admit Grushenka and to tell her if she came, "The master wishes you long life and happiness and tells you to forget him." But Grushenka sent almost every day to inquire after him. "You've come at last," she cried, flinging down the cards and joyfully greeting Alishaw, "and Maximushka's been scaring me that perhaps you wouldn't come. Ah, how I need you. Sit down to the table. What will you have, coffee?" "Yes, please," said Alishaw, sitting down at the table. "I am very hungry." "That's right. Fenya, Fenya, coffee," cried Grushenka. "It's been made a long time ready for you. And bring some little pies, and mind they are hot. Do you know, we've had a storm over those pies today. I took them to the prison for him, and would you believe it, he threw them back to me, he would not eat them. He flung one of them on the floor and stamped on it. So I said to him, 'I shall leave them with the warder, if you don't eat them before evening, it will be that your venomous spite is enough for you.' With that I went away. We quarreled again, would you believe it? Whenever I go we quarrel." Grushenka said all this in one breath in her agitation. Maximov, feeling nervous, at once smiled and looked on the floor. "What did you quarrel about this time?" asked Alishaw. "I didn't expect it in the least. Only fancy, he is jealous of the Pole. 'Why are you keeping him?' he said. 'So you've begun keeping him. He is jealous, jealous of me all the time, jealous eating and sleeping. He even took into his head to be jealous of Kuzma last week. But he knew about the Pole before?' "Yes, but there it is. He has known all about him from the very beginning, but today he suddenly got up and began scolding about him. I am ashamed to repeat what he said. Silly fellow. Rakitin went in as I came out. Perhaps Rakitin is egging him on. What do you think?" she added carelessly. "He loves you, that's what it is, he loves you so much. And now he is particularly worried. I should think he might be, with the trial tomorrow. And I went to him to say something about tomorrow, for I dread to think what's going to happen then. You say that he is worried, but how worried I am. And he talks about the Pole. He's too silly. He is not jealous of Maximushka yet, anyway. My wife was dreadfully jealous over me, too," Maximov put in his word. "Jealous of you?" Grushenka laughed in spite of herself. Of whom could she have been jealous? Of the servant girls. "Hold your tongue, Maximushka, I am in no laughing mood now, I feel angry. Don't ogle the pies. I shan't give you any, they are not good for you, and I won't give you any vodka either. I have to look after him, too, just as though I kept an almshouse," she laughed. "I don't deserve your kindness. I am a worthless creature," said Maximov, with tears in his voice. "You would do better to spend your kindness on people of more use than me. Ek, everyone is of use, Maximushka, and how can we tell who's of most use? If only the Pole didn't exist, Alishaw. He's taken it into his head to fall ill, today. I've been to see him also. And I shall send him some pies, on purpose. I hadn't sent him any, but Mitya accused me of it, so now I shall send some. Ah, here's Fenya with a letter. Yes, it's from the Poles, begging again." Pan Mushyilovich had indeed sent an extremely long and characteristically eloquent letter in which he begged her to lend him 3 rubles. In the letter was enclosed a receipt for the sum, with a promise to repay it within 3 months, signed by Pan Vrublevsky as well. Grushenka had received many such letters, accompanied by such receipts, from her former lover during the fortnight of her convalescence. but she knew that the two Poles had been to ask after her health during her illness. The first letter Grushenka got from them was a long one, written on large notepaper and with a big family crest on the seal. It was so obscure and rhetorical that Grushenka put it down before she had read half, unable to make head or tail of it. She could not attend to letters then. The first letter was followed next day by another in which Pan Mushyilovich begged her for a loan of 2,000 rubles for a very short period. Grushenka left that letter, too, unanswered. A whole series of letters had followed, one every day, all as pompous and rhetorical, but the loan asked for, gradually diminishing, dropped to 100 rubles, then to 20, 5, to 10, and finally Grushenka received a letter in which both the Poles begged her for only 1 ruble and included a receipt signed by both. Then Grushenka suddenly felt sorry for them, and at dusk she went round herself to their lodging. She found the two Poles in great poverty, almost destitution, without food or fuel, without cigarettes, in debt to their landlady. The 200 rubles they had carried off from Mityuat Mokro had soon disappeared. But Grushenka was surprised at their meeting her with arrogant dignity and self-assertion, with the greatest punctilio and pompous speeches. Grushenka simply laughed, and gave her former admirer 10 rubles. Then, laughing, she told Mitya of it and he was not in the least jealous. But ever since, the Poles had attached themselves to Grushenka and bombarded her daily with requests for money and she had always sent them small sums. And now that Dame Mitya had taken it into his head to be fearfully jealous. Like a fool, I went round to him just for a minute, on the way to see Mitya, for he is ill, too, my Pole. Grushenka began again with nervous haste. I was laughing, telling Mitya about it. Fancy, I said, my Pole had the happy thought to sing his old songs to me to the guitar. He thought I would be touched and marry him. Mitya leapt up swearing. So, there, I'll send them the pies. Fenya, is it that little girl they've sent? Here, give her 3 rubles and pack up a dozen pies in a paper and tell her to take them. And you, Alishaw, be sure to tell Mitya that I did send them the pies. I wouldn't tell him for anything, said Alishaw, smiling. Eck. You think he's unhappy about it? Why, he's jealous on purpose. He doesn't care, said Grushenka bitterly. On purpose? Queried Alishaw. I tell you you are silly, Alishaw. You know nothing about it, with all your cleverness. I am not offended that he is jealous of a girl like me. I would be offended if he were not jealous. I am like that. I am not offended at jealousy. I have a fierce heart, too. I can be jealous myself. Only what offends me is that he doesn't love me at all. I tell you he is jealous now on purpose. Am I blind? Don't I see? He began talking to me just now of that woman, of Katerina. Saying she was this and that, how she had ordered a doctor from Moscow for him, to try and save him, how she had ordered the best counsel, the most learned one, too. So he loves her, if he'll praise her to my face, more shame to him. He's treated me badly himself, so he attacked me, to make out I am in fault first and to throw it all on me. You were with your Pole before me, so I can't be blamed for Katerina, that's what it amounts to. He wants to throw the whole blame on me. He attacked me on purpose, I tell you, but I'll. Grushenka could not finish saying what she would do. She hid her eyes in her handkerchief and sobbed violently. He doesn't love Katerina Ivanovna, said Alishaw firmly. Well, whether he loves her or not, I'll soon find out for myself, said Grushenka, with a menacing note in her voice, taking the handkerchief from her eyes. Her face was distorted. Alishaw saw sorrowfully that from being mild and serene, it had become sullen and spiteful. Enough of this foolishness, she said suddenly, it's not for that I sent for you. Alishaw, darling, too, morrow, what will happen to, morrow? That's what worries me. And it's only me it worries. I look at everyone and no one is thinking of it. No one cares about it. Are you thinking about it even? Tomorrow he'll be tried, you know. Tell me, How will he be tried? You know it's the valet killed him. Good heavens. Can they condemn him in place of the valet and will no one stand up for him? They haven't troubled the valet at all, have they? He's been severely cross, examined, observed Alishaw thoughtfully, but everyone came to the conclusion it was not he. Now he is lying very ill. He has been ill ever since that attack. Really ill, added Alishaw. Oh, dear. Couldn't you go to that council yourself and tell him the whole thing by yourself? He's been brought from Petersburg for 3,000 rubles, they say. We gave these 3,000 together, Ivan, Katerina Ivanovna and I, but she paid 2,000 for the doctor from Moscow herself. The council Fetyukovich would have charged more, but the case has become known all over Russia, it's talked of in all the papers and journals. Fetyukovich agreed to come more for the glory of the thing, because the case has become so notorious. I saw him yesterday. Well? Did you talk to him? Grushenka put in eagerly. He listened and said nothing. He told me that he had already formed his opinion. But he promised to give my words consideration. Consideration. Ah, they are swindlers. They'll ruin him. And why did she send for the doctor? As an expert? They want to prove that Mitya's mad and committed the murder when he didn't know what he was doing. Alishaw smiled gently, but Mitya won't agree to that. Yes, but that would be the truth if he had killed him, cried Grushenka. He was mad then, perfectly mad, and that was my fault, wretch that I am. But, of course, he didn't do it, he didn't do it. And they are all against him, the whole town. Even Fenya's evidence went to prove he had done it. And the people at the shop, and that official, and at the tavern, too, before, people had heard him say so. They are all against him, all crying out against him. Yes, there's a fearful accumulation of evidence, Alishaw observed grimly. And Grigory Vasilievich, sticks to his story that the door was open, persists that he saw it, there's no shaking him. I went and talked to him myself. He's rude about it, too. Yes, that's perhaps the strongest evidence against him, said Alishaw. And as for Mitya's being mad, he certainly seems like it now, Grushenka began with a peculiarly anxious and mysterious air. Do you know, Alishaw, I've been wanting to talk to you about it for a long time. I go to him every day and simply wonder at him. Tell me, now. What do you suppose he's always talking about? He talks and talks and I can make nothing of it. I fancied he was talking of something intellectual that I couldn't understand in my foolishness. Only he suddenly began talking to me about a babe, that is, about some child. Why is the babe poor? He said. It's for that babe I am going to Siberia now. I am not a murderer, but I must go to Siberia. What that meant. What babe, I couldn't tell for the life of me. Only I cried when he said it, because he said it so nicely. He cried himself, and I cried, too. He suddenly kissed me and made the sign of the cross over me. What did it mean, Alishaw, tell me. What is this babe? It must be Rakitin, who's been going to see him lately, smiled Alishaw, though. That's not Rakitin's doing. I didn't see Mitya yesterday. I'll see him today. No, it's not Rakitin, it's his brother Ivan Fyodorovich upsetting him. It's his going to see him, that's what it is, Grushenka began, and suddenly broke off. Alishaw gazed at her in amazement. Ivan's going? Has he been to see him? Mitya told me himself that Ivan hasn't been once. There. What a girl I am. Blurting things out. Exclaimed Grushenka, confused and suddenly blushing. Stay, Alishaw, hush. Since I've said so much I'll tell the whole truth. He's been to see him twice, the first directly he arrived. He galloped here from Moscow at once, of course, before I was taken ill, and the second time was a week ago. He told Mitya not to tell you about it, under any circumstances, and not to tell anyone, in fact. He came secretly. Alishaw sat plunged in thought, considering something. The news evidently impressed him. "Ivan doesn't talk to me of Mitya's case," he said slowly. "He's said very little to me these last 2 months.